This is a lecture tape for February 3rd, 1999. We're in Deuteronomy chapter 6 through 11, the principles of the covenant. Now, Carol has been doing the lectures for the past 2 weeks, and she's pointed out that the book of Deuteronomy emphasizes two words, love and obedience. Now, it intrigued me because I've been teaching from Genesis through Numbers that there's no command in there that Israel was to love God. And so I went and I checked that out, and there is no reference to love. In fact, it's only mentioned 5 times in the book of Genesis through Numbers, and each time it's in Moses' prayers as he's going before God, and he says, God, remember you are a God of love, and you love Israel. Here in the book of Deuteronomy, we're finding love is a central theme. He says it's out of love that God chose Israel as his own, and it's out of love that he gave them this covenant. Last week we reviewed the Ten Commandments of the covenant, and these were given because of God's love. He knew that if they followed the commandments, it would go well with them, and if they didn't, life would be difficult. Carol also talked about the two different generations and how they viewed life during the wilderness days. She said that the older generations, those that had come out of slavery in Egypt, were constantly looking backwards and consequently complaining. The new generation now was looking forward because they would be the ones that would actually go in and inherit the land. To this younger generation, Moses had been their leader all their lives. Now, as they were prepared to enter the promised land, they knew that he would not be going with them. And so the book of Deuteronomy then is the final preparation of life ahead. Moses says that he has faithfully taught them all that God commanded, and he reminds them that the purpose of this teaching was so that they would understand and that they would want to obey God. Now, as they're entering the promised land, he says they are to preserve the laws by teaching them to their children. But more than anything else, I think Moses wanted to make sure that Israel was secure. That Israel was secure both for God and with God as they now enter the land of Canaan. Well, let's begin with chapter 6. The title is Love the Lord Your God. Look at verse 3. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Again, he's saying, hear, O Israel. Don't just listen, really hear. The result of this hearing should be obedience. He says, you're going into a good land, one that is flowing with milk and honey. We've talked about this in the past, but this simply refers to the good land. Flowing with milk emphasizes the herds and the flocks. There's going to be many young. And honey referred to the bounty of the land. That was the syrup that came from the dates. Then we go on to verses 4 to 9, which is called the Shema in Hebrew. And these verses are so important that even today, Jews around the world recite them daily in their prayers. It begins, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. What is Moses saying? He's saying you're going into a land with multiple gods, and even the gods themselves, the singular gods, are worshipped in multiple ways. He says our God is not that way. He said, Yahweh is unique. He alone is divine. He is the only God, and he is your Lord and your master. And then he goes on, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. He's commanding Israel to love God. How are they to do this? To the Hebrew mind, when they said heart, that meant with understanding and with all your emotion. With your soul is the very source of your life, and with your strength, that's everything you are and do. Nothing was left out. God's children are to love and worship him with everything they think, everything they say, everything they do, everything they are. But it doesn't stop there. Look at verse 7. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your homes and on your gates. God expects that their loving devotion will be in every area of their life, every day, including their homes. They're to talk about God's laws. They're to remember what he's done for them constantly. And the reference here to tying them as symbols on their hands and foreheads, did you see as symbol, like symbols? He says, tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. What is he saying here? The culture of that day, or the custom of that day, was that the people would wear bracelets or headbands or some type of amulet upon their body as a way of warding off evil. And quite often on those amulets would be inscribed magical words, and it was believed that freed them from evil or protected them from evil. God said, I want my words written on your hearts and mind. I want my words on your forehead, inside of you. And I want them to be carried out, my words, through obedience, which again is the emphasis on hands and what you do. He says, it's the knowing my words and the obedience of them that keeps you from evil, not wearing amulets. The door frame is very similar, and that refers to the whole house. He wants his words to permeate the entire home. Everything in the home should be obedient to God. If you remember, this was very symbolic because Israel put the blood of the lamb on their door the night of Passover in Egypt, and it was the blood of the lamb on the door that saved Israel from evil. God says, now it is my words and the obedience to my words that will protect you from evil. Now, it's clear that Moses is not just speaking to this generation, but he's talking about future generations. He's reminding them how important it is now to pass these laws and these remembrance of the Lord down from generation to generation so that they will never forget. He expresses his concern that when they enter Canaan, they will forget who God is. He's afraid that once they enjoy security of fortified cities that they did not build, riches they did not earn, water, how important is water, from springs that they did not dig, and fruit from vineyards that they had not planted, that they would forget the one who had given them all these good things. Moses said, remember, it is God who is faithful, and it's the same God that was faithful to your fathers. He keeps his promise. He is the only God. He said he would bring you into this good land flowing with milk and honey. Remember, it is he who gives you all these good things. Well, Moses goes on. He says, not only are they to love and remember God, but they're also to serve him. Look at verse 13. Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Fear in this case means reverence and awe. They are to show their reverence to God by serving him. One way was to take oaths only in his name. What is that saying? Well, again, common practice was that they would take oaths or swear vows by their gods. God says, the only way you swear oaths, Israel, is by my name. And we know from Leviticus and Numbers that if you take an oath in the Lord's name, it is binding, and he holds you accountable to that. He says, you will take oaths or vows in no other name but mine. Why? Verse 15. For the Lord your God who is among you is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land. They belong to God and no one else. He gives another warning in verse 16. Do not test the Lord your God as you did at Massah. Moses says, don't put God on trial like you did when you were in the wilderness, when you were demanding to know whether or not he was with you. He said, God has already proved himself faithful. Remember his faithfulness. Your role now is to obey, and then he will bless you as he has promised. In chapter 7, we come to another main theme, the characteristics and privileges of God's people. It's important for Israel not only to know who God is, but also who they are. But first, they have to understand they were his exclusive possession. They're called holy, and we know that means set apart for God. Holy is not because of their activity, but because of God. He has chosen them and set them apart. And because he has done this, they could not possibly give themselves to another god or to someone else. Look at 7:1. When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are entering to possess and drives out before you many nations, the Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, seven nations larger and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them. Show them no mercy. Now the word here, totally destroy or utterly destroy, in Hebrew is harim, and it means to exterminate. They were to exterminate Canaan of all cultic gods and practices. God knew that this was necessary in order for Israel to succeed. They were warned again in verse 4, if they didn't utterly destroy them and if they intermarry with them, then these people will lead the sons of Israel astray. They will draw them away from their God. God also said to destroy their masavah, their sacred stones, or standing stones. If you remember back to the video series, the very first one, there was talk of the standing stones. These would be stones 8, 10, 12 feet tall that were stood on end, so they just basically stood up in the air all by themselves. And the purpose was, when somebody went by, they would stop and say, what happened here? What are we supposed to remember? God says, I want you to remove every masavah that has any connection to the cult or the gods. He also says, I want you to cut down the Asherah poles. Now, these are poles that represented the fertility goddesses. They were quite often placed in groves or on high places. Asherah was considered the consort or the partner of the Canaanite and the Amorite gods. There's really no documentation as to how these poles were used or what they were for, but God says they're detestable. I want them taken down and destroyed. Verse 25 of chapter 7, the images of their gods you are to burn in the fire. Do not covet the silver, the gold on them, and do not take it for yourself, or you will be ensnared by it, for it is detestable to the Lord your God. God is saying, when you enter this land, I want you to have two fears, or I want you to be afraid of two things. I want you to be afraid of loving their gods, and I want you to be afraid of grieving your own God. Take note, Israel, idols are detestable. Have nothing to do with them. Don't even look at them. You remember back to the end of Numbers when it said that they would become barbs in your eyes. Through your eyes, you would be drawn into them. God knew that the silver and gold and all the coverings of the gods could prove tempting. They might not want the idol, but they could be trapped by coveting the wealth. And God knows that in that moment, gold would mean more to them than God. Well, chapter 8 through 11 is a reminder not to forget God. Moses tells the people that as they look to their uncertain future, they are to remember their past. If they think about how God was during all those difficult times in the years, they would not be terrified looking into the unknown future. He says, remember, it was God who brought you through the barren wilderness. I don't want you to think about those 40 years in the wilderness as wasted years, Israel. Those were years of training. God protected, provided, taught, and disciplined his children. It was in the wilderness that he provided manna for you when you were hungry to feed your physical bodies. But you're not only physical people, you're spiritual people. The whole time he was feeding you spiritually with his words. It was by his words he taught you the unchanging spiritual truths that were needed both for this life and for all eternity. To eat and drink is merely to exist. Only as they received and obeyed God's truth could they really live as God intended them. Lives of lasting satisfaction and eternal security. God's plan for his people was to enjoy life, to live in the land, and to prosper. But look at verse 10. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. But be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving to you this day. He goes on to elaborate. He says, once prosperity becomes an established part of your life, two other dangers are lurking there, pride and materialism. When wealth and comfort are part of your everyday life, don't think it's because of your own efforts. Verse 18, but remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce the wealth. God also knows that when they go into battle and conquer the land, they will want to take credit for it, saying, oh, it's because of our superior size and military strength. that we were the conquering force. So once again, we see the words in chapter 9, "Hear, O Israel, listen up, Israel." Moses says, I want you to look at yourselves now. You're afraid. You're looking at these nations and saying they're too powerful for us. But remember this later, because it is God who is going to give you the victory, and God is going to give you this land. It has nothing to do with your own righteousness, because you're a stiff-necked people. We also see the importance of Moses' intercessory prayers to the life of Israel, as Moses goes on to remind them of their rebellion in the wilderness, and were it not for his intercession, they would have been wiped out, not once, but twice. As you read and studied the account of Moses today, I hope you saw the total submission of God's servant Moses. When Moses came before the Lord, he fell face down before him in an attitude of complete surrender. He begins with the word "Sovereign Lord," giving God the honor and respect due him. He knows that there is no other. He says, "You alone are the Holy One." And Moses knows better than anyone the seriousness and the urgency of these rebellions. Israel has worshipped a golden calf. They are under the divine wrath, the death sentence of God. And so Moses comes earnestly before the Lord in prayer. Moses knows it's a matter of life and death. We see more information here than we saw in Exodus. It says he spent 40 days and night in God's presence pleading that the Lord would change his mind. And during that time, he ate and drank nothing because of their great sin. We also see Moses coming before the Lord boldly, because in Exodus 32:9, God had already said, "Moses, let me alone. I wish to destroy them." But it was only through Moses' persistent prayer that God listened. Moses says, "I don't want you to ever brag that this land was given to you because you're so righteous, because you're a bunch of rebellious idolaters, and boasting is totally unfitting to you." It would appear that Moses spent a good deal of his ministry time in prayer before the Lord on behalf of Israel. Well, Moses is not retelling these stories in order to open wounds, but is using their history as a warning. He reminds them again how during this same event he had come down from the mountain and thrown down the tablets of which the Ten Commandments were on, because he had seen they had already broken that covenant even before it had been given to them. And yet he said God told him to go back up, and he was given two more stone tablets. Even though they had broken God's covenant, God renewed his covenant with them and gave them a brand new start. He says, "You didn't deserve to be pardoned." But it's God's very nature to forgive, and to do so fully, completely, and immediately. He goes on to say that these worst rebellions are not a total disaster if you and future generations will learn from them and not repeat these mistakes. Then he goes on to remind them once again that God is a generous, loving God. He's merciful, but don't fall back to these rebellious ways. God is also just. Remember this when you go into Canaan. Chapter 10, verse 12 says, "And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you? You are to fear the Lord your God. You are to walk in all his ways." Here it is again. "You are to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I am giving you today." Why? For your own good. He then goes on and reminds Israel of who God is. He says he's the creator, the sustainer of all life, God of God, Lords of Lords, great, mighty, and awesome God. He says, "Israel, hold fast onto him, because he's the giver of the covenant of love. And as such, he deserves your love and your obedience." He's calling it a covenant of love. And he says God's love for Israel is the very foundation of this covenant. The initiative was God's. He reached out to you because he loved you. But there are two parties in this agreement. And your part is to respond to God's love by loving him in return. And do this wholeheartedly. Moses then goes on to talk about circumcision. Circumcision, you'll remember back in Genesis, was given to Abraham as a physical sign of the covenant between God and Abraham and his future generations. God had chosen Abraham to build him into a nation and to bring him into the promised land. But now Moses says, it's just as important to circumcise your hearts as it is your body. What is he saying? He's saying obedience, love and obedience is not merely a matter of a religious ceremony, but it comes from the very heart, from the very innermost part of you. Well, having said all that, I found 10 verse 15 very interesting, because here we're talking about the covenant, the sign, the love God has for his people, the affection he's put upon him. And then he goes on to say, but they're not the only people he loves and protects. Look at verse 18. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widows and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. And you are to love those who are aliens, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt. Not only does God love these people, but he loves others. He loves any who will turn their hearts towards God, and he expects his own people to respond to these also with love. As we go through this section, we need to keep in mind, just as Israel was directed to do so, that we also are to love all those who love the Lord or come before the Lord. Well, Moses then concludes his second message by telling the people they can't be neutral. They will either love God or hate him. If they love him, they will obey him and receive his blessings. But if they disobey, they will be saying that they hate God. They will receive his curses and the punishment. There is no compromise. The choice is up to them. When I was trying to come up with an application on this lesson, there is so much in here. In fact, I have one application in the handout today, and I'm sure many of you came up with applications as your own. But as I was doing this lecture, I decided to go with Remember the Past. Moses is saying, you know, when you were in the wilderness wandering around and life was really tough and the only place you had to look was up, God was faithful to you. He provided everything you needed and more. Remember that. But also remember when you are comfortable, when you're in that land of promise, that it was God who gave it to you. Remember that you are there because of him. It is not your own effort, because God was the one that placed you there. God was the one that gave you the ability to even be there. And I thought, how true is that in our lives today? All of us face wilderness times. All of us get to a place where there's no place to look but up, and we know God is faithful to us. We've seen him do so time and time again. We need to remember those times. But at the same time, we also live in a very comfortable society. We are in the times of wealth and prosperity, and we must also keep in mind that we are here simply because God allowed us to be. He placed us here, and he has given us the ability to remain here. And we must remember God. He is the same God in those difficult times as he is in the prosperous times. And when we look ahead and the future looks uncertain and fearful, we also are to remember that our God is the same God as the God of Israel, and he is faithful to his children. And what does he require of us? He requires that we obey him, but his desire is that it comes out of a heart of love, because he first loved us. Let's pray. Oh, Father, as I say so often, these are powerful lessons. I've looked at Israel so long as just wandering in the wilderness, as aimless wanderings, and yet I've discovered that you had a plan even in that. You provided for their physical needs, but you were providing for their spiritual needs as well, in a very unique way. Help each one of us as we go through difficult times, that we will learn from these times, that we will look to you and say, not only to give us the physical needs, but also that we would look for the spiritual benefits that you are bringing to us. And then in those times of prosperity, Lord, help us never to forget that we are there only because of your grace, only because you have placed us there, and only because you have given us the ability to do so. We love you, Lord. Be with us now as we continue to study these lessons that Moses is presenting to Israel. Help us to learn all there is that you have in there for us. In Jesus' name, amen.